Brother Mack is going to be our exhorting brother tonight, and he's asked us to read 2 Samuel chapter 24, and Brother Jimmy's going to lead us in that reading.
Second Samuel chapter 24, verse 1. And again the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel, and he moved David against them to say, "Go, number Israel and Judah." For the king said to Joab, the captain of the host, which was with him, "Go now through all the tribes of Israel, from Dan even to Beersheba, and number ye the people, that I may know the number of the people." And Joab said unto the king, "Now the Lord thy God add unto the people how many soever they be, an hundredfold, and that the eyes of my lord the king may see it. But why doth my lord the king delight in this thing?" Notwithstanding, the king's words prevailed against Joab and against the captains of the host. And Joab and the captains of the host went out from the presence of the king to number the people of Israel. And they passed over Jordan and pitched in Aroer on the right side of the city that lieth in the midst of the river of Gad and toward Jazer. Then they came to Gilead and to the land of Tatum Hatcha, and they came to Dagon and unto Zidon, and about Zidon, and came to the stronghold of Tyre and to all the cities of the Hivites and of the Canaanites, and they went out to the south of Judah even to Beersheba. So when they had gone through all the land, they came to Jerusalem at the end of 9 months and 20 days. And Joab gave up the sum of the number of the people unto the king, and there were in Israel 800,000 valiant men that drew the sword, and the men of Judah were 500,000 men. And David's heart smote him after that he had numbered the people. And David said unto the Lord, "I have sinned greatly in that I have done. And now I beseech thee, O Lord, take away the iniquity of thy servant, for I have done very foolishly." For when David was up in the morning, the word of the Lord came unto the prophet Gad, David's seer, saying, "Go and say unto David, Thus saith the Lord, I offer thee three things. Choose thee one of them, that I may do it unto thee." So Gad came to David and told him and said unto him, "Shall 7 years of famine come unto thee in thy land? Or wilt thou flee 3 months before thine enemies while they pursue thee? Or that there be 3 days pestilence in the land? Now advise and see what answer I shall return to him that sent me." And David said unto Gad, "I am in a great strait. Let us fall now into the hand of the Lord, for his mercies are great, and let me not fall into the hand of man." So the Lord sent a pestilence upon Israel from the morning even to the time appointed, and there died of the people from Dan even to Beersheba 70,000 men. And when the angel stretched out his hand upon Jerusalem to destroy it, the Lord repented him of the evil, and said to the angel that destroyed the people, "It is enough. Stay now thine hand." And the angel of the Lord was by the threshing place of Araunah the Jebusite. And David spake unto the Lord when he saw the angel that smote the people, and said, "Lo, I have sinned, and I have done wickedly. But these sheep, what have they done? Let thine hand, I pray thee, be against me and against my father's house." And David came that day, and Gad came that day to David and said unto him, "Go up, rear an altar unto the Lord in the threshing floor of Araunah the Jebusite." And David, according to the saying of Gad, went up as the Lord commanded. And Araunah looked and saw the king and his servants coming on toward him. And Araunah went out and bowed himself before the king on his face upon the ground. And Araunah said, "Wherefore is my lord the king come to his servant?" And David said, "To buy the threshing floor of thee, to build an altar unto the Lord, that the plague may be stayed from the people." And Araunah said unto David, "Let my lord the king take and offer up what seemeth good unto him. Behold, here be oxen for burnt sacrifice, and threshing instruments and other instruments of the oxen for wood." All these things did Araunah as the king give unto the king. And Araunah said unto the king, "The Lord thy God accept thee." And the king said unto Araunah, "Nay, but I will surely buy it of thee at a price. Neither will I offer burnt offerings unto the Lord my God of that which cost me nothing. So David bought the threshing floor and the oxen for 50 shekels of silver. And David built there an altar unto the Lord, and offered burnt offerings and peace offerings. So the Lord was entreated for the land, and the plague was stayed from Israel. So read 2 Samuel 24.
Thank you, Brother Jimmy. And now, ask Brother Mac to come forward for his exhortation tonight on David and Aruna.
Dear brothers and sisters in Jesus Christ our Lord, good evening. It is a pleasure for my sister, wife Deb, and I to be here once again with so many of our brothers and sisters that we have such a great love for. We are indeed few in number, but may the strength that we derive from one another this week be carried back to our home ecclesias, and may the Lord's will prosper in that manner. Last year we had the good fortune to listen to our brother Richard Hamlin deliver some classes on David. And for me, they were very enjoyable and very thought-provoking. And I know the rest of the brethren that were here from Orlando enjoyed them as well, because we had just gone through those chapters in our Wednesday evening class, and when we got home, we used the good thoughts that were presented to us as a springboard and to continue into our studies. And when we got home, within a couple months, we were on 2 Samuel chapter 24, which is a chapter that has a lot of interesting information for us to examine. We're going to spend time speaking about David, and I'm going to pronounce it Aranya. Okay, I'm not sure that that's necessarily correct. It's what I'm used to. This is a man who has four different names in the scriptures. And that will be interesting for us to examine. A man with four names. We're familiar that throughout Yahweh's word, there are often times where an individual's name is changed or called by a different name, and it's kind of a signal event to us that something special is being portrayed in the account before us. But this man, Aranya, is extremely interesting because even though it's not shown in the authorized version, he is a man of four names, and that is what we will spend most of our time discussing this evening. An outline of the chapter that we might just speak about before we get into our remarks on David and Aranya. At the opening of the chapter, we find Yahweh punishing both Israel and David. Because Israel had been a faithless nation, and the things that had happened in the previous chapters, Yahweh saw fit to do this, and he used David and his thoughts in numbering Israel to accomplish this incident. In verses 2 through 9, we find that David numbers both Israel in Judah. Though you will find, if you examine the account in 1 Chronicles chapter 21, that this numbering was never actually completed. Joab did not actually complete that task. He left, I don't have it in my notes, but I think it was Benjamin he did not number. Verses 10 through 14, David is made aware of his sin, and he chooses to suffer with the people. We might remark that David's character is wonderfully portrayed for us here, and there is a great lesson when we examine David's choice that was given. As Brother Jim read for us this evening, he was given the choice of having 3 years of famine. The King James says seven. The Revised Version says three. You might want to make a note of that and investigate it for yourself. He was given a choice of 3 years of famine. He was given a choice of fleeing for 3 months before his enemies, or 3 days of pestilence. Now, due to David's age, we can see that if he had chosen for the famine to come upon the people, that due to his position and wealth, he would not have suffered as greatly as the people. If he had chosen war, he also, due to his age, as I started to say a moment ago, would not have suffered as greatly with the people, because he was no longer in a position that he was going out to battle. A few chapters before, if you want to just make a mental note of that, it's in chapter 21 and verse 15 and onward that we find that David was not going to be going out any longer. In verse 17 specifically, it was stated that he should no longer go out to battle, that the light of Israel be extinguished. So David decided to choose to suffer with the people. Right? He chose this plague of death, thereby ensuring that whatever was going to come upon the people could just as well affect his life equally as it could any of those with which he ruled over. It certainly shows great character that David chose to suffer with the people. And as he is the type of our Lord, Yeshua the Messiah, we can see how this points forward to his suffering like his brethren, his suffering for sin, though he himself had no sins, personal sin. Verses 15 and 16, it is recorded that Yahweh sent a plague of death, as I've decided to term it in my notes, a plague of death, and 70,000 people fell in Israel because of this plague of death. The great number of people who died due to this punishment would leave no doubt that it was Yahweh's will that this be accomplished. 70,000 people fell in such a short period of time. 70 also seems to be a very special number that might in many ways speak to the goodness and the severity of Yahweh. Right? It can speak to the goodness and severity of Yahweh. I'm getting to where I can never read any of my notes anymore without proper light. Think of the number 70 in this light. In terms of blessing, Terah was 70 when Abram was born. There were 70 souls that went into Egypt. There were 70 palm trees at Elam. When the children of Israel came to Elam, there were 70 palm trees. On the other side, in thinking about the severity of deity's punishments. Israel was in Babylon for 70 years. Babylon was over Israel for 70 years. Rome desolated Israel in AD 70. 70 is a number that also witnesses to the glory of God. We find in other references, such as Daniel in chapter 9, in the 70 weeks. So when we think about 70,000, and we think about how this number is used so often, it would have left no doubt that it was a number that points to the goodness and the severity of Yahweh. And in this instance, it was showing the severity of his punishments for those who do not follow after his word. Well, verses 17 through 25, which we will spend our time in the rest of our remarks this evening, shows how this plague of death is stayed in the field of the man with four names, in the field of Aranya. If you look at verse 16 in the King James Version, of course, as we have it in the title, David and Aranya, that is how the King James Version spells this individual's name. If we were to look at the Hebrew text, we would find that there is a different name used here. This is actually the threshing place of Avarnah, the Jebusite. All right? To spell it, you know, in English, we would spell it A-V-A-R-N-A-H. Avarnah, the Jebusite. So here's another name that we did not know this fellow by, this individual, until this point. He is Avarnah, the Jebusite. The name Avarnah means to make, to shine. Right? His name, when it is rendered this way, means to make, to shine. And it's going to be rendered differently throughout the rest of the chapter. Okay? This is not going to be the spelling in the Hebrew text throughout the rest of the account through verses 17 through 25. But in verse 16, it is in this particular manner. And of course, when we think of someone's name who means to make, to shine, we think of someone who is manifesting the glory of the deity. All right, someone who has been blessed to manifest the glory of the deity. Let's look at the references that we have here, which are very familiar to us. Daniel chapter 12, first of all, verses 2 through 3. And I've written 2 through 3 in the notes, but for context, we will start at verse 1. And at that time shall Michael stand up, the great prince, which standeth for the children of thy people. And there shall be a time of trouble, such as never was since there was a nation, even to that same time. And at that time thy people shall be delivered, every one that shall be found written in the book. And many of them that sleep in the dust of the earth shall wake, some to everlasting life, and some to shame and everlasting contempt. And they that be wise shall shine as the brightness of the firmament, and they that turn many to righteousness as the stars forever and ever. In Matthew chapter 13 and verse 43, a familiar reference to many of you, it reads, "Then shall the righteous shine forth as the sun in the kingdom of their Father. Who hath ears to hear, let him hear." So in verse 16, when we come upon this man, Avarnah, who David was told to go and visit, and to, in his field, offer up a sacrifice to stay the plague of death, we think of a special people. We think of those who have been made to shine in the kingdom of the Father. We think of one who represents the redeemed, the saints made immortal in the kingdom of Yahweh. Abarnah was hidden from the angel of death. The reference that we have listed here, 2 Chronicles 21 and verse 20, if we turn there and we read the parallel account, as it were, an account with some different facts revealed for us, though, we find that he hid himself from the angel of death. All right, 2 Chronicles 21 and verse 20. And I wrote 2 Chronicles, and I just realized that it's 1 Chronicles. I apologize. All right, 1 Chronicles 21 and 20. I knew when I got there it didn't look right. None of my notes were in the margin. And Ornan turned back and saw the angel, and his four sons with him hid themselves. Now Ornan was threshing wheat. Now, Chronicles, we find out the third name of this individual. It's Ornan, the Jebusite, and we'll talk more on that later. But notice here that 1 Chronicles 21 says that he hid himself from the angel. In other words, he hid himself from the angel of death. And we might make a remark, was he truly hidden in the sense that if it was Yahweh's will that he be found by that angel, that he was really being successful in hiding himself? Did that angel know he was there? Well, sure he did. But he was hidden from the angel of death. He was protected, if you will, from the angel of death, because he is one of those who are going to be made to shine in the kingdom of the Father. Look at the reference in Isaiah chapter 26. Isaiah 26, verses 19 through 21. Thy dead men shall live together, with my dead body shall they arise. Awake and sing, ye that dwell in the dust, for thy dew is as the dew of herbs, and the earth shall cast out the dead. Come, my people, enter thou into thy chambers, and shut thy doors about thee. Hide thyself. Remember, Avadonai was hidden from the angel of death. Hide thyself, as it were, for a little moment, until the indignation be overpassed. For behold, Yahweh cometh out of his place to punish the inhabitants of the earth for their iniquity. The earth also shall disclose her blood, and shall no more cover her slain. So we suggest then that when we see his name rendered as Avadonai, we should think about the saints who are hidden but from a little moment. For a little moment, those who have been caused to made the shine in the kingdom of Yahweh. We also know from 2 Chronicles chapter 3 and verse 1 that the temple was to be built in this very place. David has been sent to Avadonai the Jebusite to erect an altar, and at this place will the plague of death be stayed. And we find from 2 Chronicles chapter 3, verse 1, that this is the place that has been set apart for the temple that Solomon will build. Alright? It's in the land of Moriah. So it is a special place if we think about it. The threshing place of those redeemed from death will become a place of worship in the kingdom age. The place where the plague of death is stayed will eventually become a place of worship for all nations to come to. We saw that represented in Solomon's case, when all nations come to see his glory, such as the Queen of Sheba. And we know in the future that will certainly be played out as well, the allegory of David and Solomon. Joel chapter 3, verses 12 through 21. Joel 3, starting at verse 12. Let the heathen be wakened and come up to the valley of Jehoshaphat, for there will I sit to judge all the heathen round about. Put ye in the sickle, for the harvest is ripe. Come, get you down, for the press is full, and fats overflow, for their wickedness is great. Multitudes, multitudes, in the valley of decision, for the day of Yahweh is near, in the valley of decision. The sun and the moon shall be darkened, and the stars shall withdraw their shining. Yahweh also shall roar out of Zion, and utter his voice from Jerusalem, and the heavens and the earth shall shake. But Yahweh will be the hope of his people, and the strength of the children of Israel. So shall ye know that I am Yahweh your God, dwelling in Zion, my holy mountain. Then shall Jerusalem be holy, and there shall no more strangers pass through her any more. And it shall come to pass in that day that the mountain shall drop down new wine, and the hills shall flow with milk, and all the rivers of Judah shall flow with waters, and a fountain shall come forth out of the house of Yahweh, and shall water the valley of Shittim. Egypt shall be a desolation, and Edom shall be a desolate wilderness, for the violence against the children of Judah, because they have shed innocent blood in their land. But Judah shall dwell forever in Jerusalem from generation to generation, for I will cleanse their blood that I have not cleansed, for Yahweh dwelleth in Zion. We see from this reading in Joel chapter 3 that the threshing floor of which the nations will be punished in will be the very place in where they will come to worship. Ezekiel chapters 40 through 48, we see a description of Ezekiel's temple that will be built for that very purpose. We read a moment ago the name which Chronicles records for Avadonah, Ornan, which means light perpetuated, very similar to the name Avadonah. In Revelation chapter 21, the Apocalypse chapter 21, let's read verses 9 and 23. Pay note to verse 9 before we go on to 23, and verse 23 will make our point. But in verse 9, we see what John is told he is going to see. And there came unto me one of the seven angels, which had the seven vials full of the seven last plagues, and talked with me, saying, come hither, I will show thee the bride, the Lamb's wife. John was going to be shown the bride, the Lamb's wife. Those who will be caused to made to shine, those who will, if you will, bear the name Avadonah. Alright? Also in verse 17, John was told that the city he was measuring was the measure of a man. So what we see here is not a description of a literal building, but a spiritual building, of which Yeshua the Messiah is the chief cornerstone. And then verse 23 says about this spiritual city. And the city hath no need of the sun, neither of the moon, to shine in it. For the glory of God did lighten it, and the Lamb is the light thereof. And no doubt in it the saints will be like Avadonah and Ornan the Jebusite. The name changes of this man when we come to verse 18. In verse 18, Hebraically, it is rendered as Aron Yah. Aron Yah. And it will be rendered that way in verse 18 and verse 18 alone. This name, Aron Yah, is different from Av Adonah. Remember, Av Adonah means to make to shine. But Aron Yah means joyful singing of Yah. Okay? Joyful singing of Yah. And I hope you understand the important distinction that I'm placing on here. This isn't joyful singing for Yahweh. Joyful singing of Yahweh. So this name implies a people in which Yahweh will be pleased to sing with joy over. So we see once again that this man truly is special in the name that he is given in this portion of the account. Let's read Zephaniah chapter 3, verse 17. Zephaniah 3:17. Yahweh thy God in the midst of thee is mighty. He will save. He will rejoice over thee with joy. He will rest in his love. He will joy over thee with singing. Isaiah chapter 62. In verse 5. For as a young man marrieth a virgin, so shall thy sons marry thee. And as the bridegroom rejoices over the bride, so shall thy God rejoice over thee. In chapter 65, verses 17 through 19. For behold, I create new heavens and a new earth, and the former shall not be remembered nor come into mind. But be glad and rejoice forever in that which I create. For behold, I create Jerusalem a rejoicing, and her people a joy. And I, Yahweh, and I will rejoice in Jerusalem, and joy in my people. And the voice of weeping shall be no more heard in her, nor the voice of crying. I'm not going to read the references we have on the board in our notes in Jeremiah 32 and in Hosea 2 and verse 19. You may want to read those at your own leisure in your personal study, but let's do turn to Malachi chapter 3. And read verse 17. And it would be best if we back up to verse 16 here, I suppose. Then they that feared Yahweh spake often one to another, and Yahweh hearkened and heard him. And a book of remembrance was written before him for them that feared Yahweh and that thought upon his name. And they shall be mine, saith Yahweh of hosts, in that day when I make up my jewels, and I will spare them as a man spareth his own son that serveth him. Aron Yah then at this point represents a people in which the deity will be pleased to sing over with great joy. And brothers and sisters, that should cause us to think as we pause for a moment, are we in our lives working to learn to serve Him with all our heart, all our mind, and all our soul, so that when that day comes, He will be pleased to rejoice over us? there is great work for us to do to prepare so that he will rejoice over us. David was initially trying to get to Gibeon. And if we look further, or back, I should have said, in Samuel, we'll find that at this particular point in time, the altar was in Gibeon. But Gad instructed him to go and build an altar in Araunah's field. What might this mean for us? Well, as we've written in our notes here for you to plainly see where we're going with this thought, the Mosaic altar could not of itself stay the plague of death. David then going to that particular altar was never going to stay the plague of death. The plague of death that has existed over mankind since the Garden of Eden. It was but a shadow, of course, that would teach how that plague of death would and can have a victory achieved over it. And of course we know that it is Christ who has achieved that victory. It is Christ and his sacrifice that altar, which was at this time in Gibeon, pointed to, which could in reality stay the plague of death. We've really gone through a lot of ground at home in Orlando in our studies, and we have spent really, I think, almost the entirety of this year studying Solomon's Temple, and I certainly don't have time to relay all the great lessons that we as an ecclesia have been able to pick out from this lesson. But when we consider that Gibeon's where the altar was. David was trying to get to Gibeon, but he ends up going to the field of Araunah. And it's in the field of Araunah that Solomon's temple is originally then built. And when we look at that beautiful structure, of which is completely a type of Yeshua and the saints, there are some wonderful lessons that we can derive from this as we continue on through. It points us to the grand fulfillment when the plague of death is stayed. It points us to the kingdom age when sin and death are no more an issue for the saints because they have made immortal. They have been made consubstantial with the deity. And why? Let's look at the references here in Hebrews chapter 8, first of all. Hebrews 8, verse 8 through 13. For finding fault with them, he saith, "Behold, the days come, saith the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah, not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers in the day when I took them by the hand to lead them out of the land of Egypt, because they continued not in my covenant, and I regarded them not, saith the Lord. For this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel. After those days, saith the Lord, I will put my laws in their mind and write them in their hearts, and I will be to them a God, and they shall be to me a people. And they shall not teach every man his neighbor and every man his brother, saying, Know the Lord, for all this, for all shall know me, from the least to the greatest. For I will be merciful to their unrighteousness, and their sins and their iniquities will I remember no more. And that he saith, A new covenant he hath made the first old. Now that which decayeth and waxeth old is ready to vanish away. In this reading in Hebrews chapter 8, certainly we see how that covenant, which was in the Mosaic law, was to pass away, that true life was to come through Christ. In Romans chapter 8, we know very well what the third verse says there. Romans Romans 8, chapter 3. For what the law could not do, in that it was weak through the flesh, God sending His own Son in the likeness of sinful flesh, and for sin, condemned sin in the flesh. In Galatians chapter 3, verses 17 through 25, we know very well. I'm not going to read those references. We trust that they are memory verses to you, but we certainly know how Paul teaches there that the law was a schoolmaster to lead them unto Christ. David sets off for Gibeon, but he is directed by Gad to the field of Araunah. We might make mention to you that we certainly try to portray this as the field of Araunah here, joyful singing of Yah, and we have focused particularly in on the saints, a people which Yahweh would be pleased to joy over. But for the sake of time, we really didn't go over what I think is another application to this section of the allegory happening before this, and that is Israel, natural Israel, being transformed. And in fact, really, one could make an argument with some of the references that I made that it's referring to Israel and being transformed into a people that Yahweh will joy over. So we would suggest there is certainly a double application here. Let's move on to the third name, which is given in 2 Samuel 24, and that is Araunah. Verses 20 through 24, the name is spelled not Avadonav, not Araunah, but Araunah, Araunah. And I'm not sure if that's the way it's pronounced. It's just because I'm so used to pronouncing the other names Araunah, I've settled on that pronunciation. Well, now when we look at this particular name, as the first two names meant something slightly different, this name will take us in a slightly different direction. Okay? Avadonah meant to make to shine. Araunah, joyful singing of Yahweh. And Araunah means to shout for joy. To shout for joy. Whereas Araunah implied a people that Yahweh shouts over, Araunah implies a people who shout for joy to Yahweh. A people who do shout for joy. Let's look at Psalm chapter 32, verse 11. Be glad in Yahweh, and rejoice, ye righteous, and shout for joy. All ye that are upright in heart. Psalm 132, verses 9 through 16. Let the priest be clothed with righteousness, and let the saints shout for joy. For thy servant David's sake, turn not away the face of thine anointed. Yahweh has sworn in truth unto David, he will not turn from it. Of the fruit of thy body will I set upon thy throne. If thy children will keep my covenant and my testimony that I shall teach them, their children shall also sit upon thy throne forevermore. For Yahweh hath chosen Zion. He hath desired it for his habitation. This is my rest forever. Here will I dwell, for I have desired it. I will abundantly bless her provision. I will satisfy her poor with bread. I will also clothe her priests with salvation, and her saints shall shout aloud for joy. Isaiah chapter 12. In verse 6. Cry out and shout, thou inhabitant of Zion. For great is the Holy One of Israel in the midst of thee. In Zephaniah chapter 3, which we referenced earlier, this time verses 14 and 15. Sing, O daughter of Zion, shout, O Israel, be glad and rejoice with all the heart, O daughter of Israel, or daughter of Jerusalem. Yahweh hath taken away thy judgments. He hath cast out thine enemy. The King of Israel, even Yahweh, is in the midst of thee. Thou shalt not see evil any more. Sing, O daughter of Zion, verse 14 says, shout, O Israel. And why? Because thy judgments have been taken away. And brethren, when we think then of Arana, what is it that we look forward to? And really, indeed, what is it that we now shout for joy for? Well, we shout for joy because we have the atonement. We have the means of which iniquity can be taken away and our sins be blotted out, removed as far as the east from the west. Is that not something to shout for joy for? And certainly in the kingdom age, when we are made perfect in both body and substance and character, never failing anymore, it will certainly be a great time for us to shout for joy. David came to this man, Arana, and he bought the floor in which he was threshing. What a great lesson and a great parallel for us. David came to this man and paid a price, and paid a price that the plague of death might be stayed. And Arana was the man that was going to benefit for that price paid. Now, certainly we're not trying to overlook the fact that in the allegory of things, certainly Yeshua benefited, that he has received the atonement. We're certainly not overlooking that fact, but we're focusing in this allegory on the fact that at this point in time, that this man was going to receive the benefit of what was about to happen. He was going to be paid so that the sacrifice could be made. We might equate that then to the great benefit that we have received, the great joy that we have, and that we have received a sacrifice that is able to bring us redemption. Yeshua has bought us, and if you will, in looking at this in the allegory sense, we have received the payment, so to speak. If you understand how I'm applying this, I realize those words could be twisted in a wrong light. So I trust you're following me in the way that I am intending those words to mean. 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 20. For ye are bought with a price, therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. Chapter 7, verse 23. Ye are bought with a price. Be not ye the servants of men. And in 1 Peter chapter 2, and verse 9. But ye are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, an holy nation, a peculiar people, that ye should show forth the praises of him who hath called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. And that word peculiar, we know in our margins it is rendered a purchased people. A purchased people. Yeshua has bought us. He has paid the price for our redemption. We have received that benefit, just as Arana was to receive money for the land that he was going to purchase to erect that altar upon. And through these events through the altar that David erects on this very site in which Solomon's temple is going to be eventually built, and even more importantly, in the same geographical area of which the Lord is to be crucified in the land of Moriah, the plague of death is stayed, and life and immortality are brought to light. Hebrews chapter 2, verses 14 and 15. For as much then as the children are partakers of flesh and blood, he, Yeshua, he also himself likewise took part of the same, that through death he might destroy him that had the power of death, that is, the devil, and deliver them who through fear of death were all their lifetime subject to bondage. As I read these verses and I think about the account in 2 Samuel, and as it's recorded in 1 Chronicles, we can think of ourselves then as Abarnah, who was under a fear of death. So much that he hid himself from the angel of death. He was hidden, if you will, for but a little moment. And we all our lifetime are subject to bondage, but we have the hope that Christ has brought to light for us. Romans chapter 8 and verse 2. Should read verse 1 certainly for the context. There is therefore now no condemnation to them which are in Christ Jesus, who walk not after the flesh, but after the Spirit. For the law of the Spirit of life in Christ Jesus hath made me free from the law of sin and death. Aranya, in his field, has erected this altar which has brought to the end the plague of death. And we'll end with one final comment to make here. Notice in verse 23 of 2 Samuel chapter 24 that the account says, all these things did Araunah as a king. As a king. Give unto the king. Alright? All these things did Araunah as a king give unto the king. And Araunah said unto the king, Yahweh thy God accept thee. It is interesting that the account portrays this man as a king who submits to a greater king. To the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. When we think of those who will be caused to shout for joy, much of their shouting, much of our shouting for joy will be because we have been made kings and priests with the King in the kingdom of Yahweh. The Apocalypse chapter 5. Verse 10. We'll back up to verse 9. And they sung a new song. If you will, they shouted for joy. They sung a new song, saying, Thou art worthy to take the book and to open the seals thereof, for thou wast slain, and hast redeemed us to God by thy blood out of every kindred and tongue and people and nation, and has made us unto our God kings and priests, and we shall reign on the earth. Chapter 17 and verse 14. These shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them, for he is Lord of lords and King of kings, and they that are with him are called and chosen and faithful. Finally, chapter 19 and verse 16. And he hath on his vesture and on his thigh a name written, King of Kings and Lord of Lords. We should consider ourselves fortunate, brethren, that we have been given all these things to hope for and all these promises, that we can look forward to reigning with him on the earth as kings under the King, and shouting for joy as Arana did here, because the plague of death had been stayed, all sorrowing had been taken away. 70,000 had died in Israel. It was a great plague of death, and it certainly, in my mind, represents the condition of mankind since the fall. But it has now been brought to an end. And it is that day that we labor for and look forward to.